If you worked during the government shutdown last year, you may qualify for a spot in a lawsuit against the federal government. More than a million people worked without pay last October. Matt Kaiser is an attorney for Arnold & Porter's Labor and Employment Practice. Matt, it's a pleasure to have you on the program this afternoon. I don't think I've ever heard of a class action lawsuit against the United States government before. That's one thing about this story in this case that is it seems unique to me. And the federal employees potentially getting a payback from the federal government through a legal action is unusual to me, too. Explain how this is all working, how the case is proceeding, Matt, from a legal perspective. Thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having me on. Pleasure. I agree with you that this is a unique case. It was actually a case of first impression before the Chief Judge of the United States Court of Federal Claims. And the genesis of the case is that, as you said, during the partial government shutdown from October 1st through October 16th, 2013, certain employees were deemed essential or accepted employees that had to continue to work and perform their normal job duties. So while these individuals continued to work, they're arguing that they should have been paid, and they should have been paid on time. And the issue is that there was a five-day period where they actually didn't get paid on time. They were actually paid in the subsequent pay period. So these folks worked, and they weren't paid basically for 5 days on time. Eventually, as you know, every federal worker was paid after the shutdown ended, but these plaintiffs are arguing that because there was a brief delay in getting paid, there was a violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act because they weren't paid minimum wage.
So as you're explaining this, I'm imagining people in the audience hearing you explain it and going, yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. I'm imagining a scenario where maybe I had a credit card payment that was due and I couldn't make it, so I accrued additional interest or late charges or something like that because I didn't make my payment on time. And yeah, I did get the money eventually, but it wasn't in time to meet that other deadline I had to whatever other obligation I had. The crux of this is the lawsuit was filed October 24th of last year, not long after the shutdown, the pay periods passed where this would have been impacted. And just a week and a half or so ago, Andy Medici at the Federal Times writes, Judge Patricia Campbell-Smith, the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, refused a government motion to dismiss the lawsuit and agreed the government violated the Fair Labor Standards Act that you just mentioned a moment ago, Matt. What happens next in a case like this, and do different things happen in a case like this because the federal government's involved?
So this was the motion to dismiss stage, and the motion to dismiss stage means that both sides write briefs and had oral argument and said, as a matter of law, the government argued as a matter of law, this case shouldn't proceed. There wasn't a violation of the law. And what the judge ruled is, no, in fact, the plaintiffs have stated a claim for a violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act. But what does that mean going forward? It means a number of things. First, the government could appeal. Second, there is on September 2nd, the deadline for the government to oppose the plaintiff's attempt at certifying this as a collective action. So a collective action means that numerous similarly situated employees, all of those who worked and didn't get paid on time, can join the lawsuit. So that's the next step, is the collective action. But more importantly, in the ruling by the judge said, yes, there is the motion to dismiss is denied, and there has been a violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act. However, she invited the government to brief its defense, because right now the crux of the case is liquidated damages. So if there's a violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act and you weren't paid for that pay period, you are usually entitled to liquidated damages for the amount that you should have been paid. So it's almost extra pay here.
Mm-hmm.
So even though all of these plaintiffs eventually got their paycheck, the reason that this could cost, you know, millions of dollars is because all those paychecks, you think about it, could be doubled, right?
Right.
And the way that liquidated damages work, because I practice in this area, and as you can expect, as a partner at a big firm, I'm representing employers on this. What you would try to argue is that there was a good faith basis for the violation, and thus liquidated damages are not appropriate. And the judge actually invited briefing on this. And the judge says right here, as accepted under the statute, liquidated damages are not available if an employer can show that it acted in good faith and that had a reasonable belief that it was complying with the FLSA. At this stage in the proceedings, the court does not address whether liquidated damages are appropriate. Rather, the court considers only on motion by defendant whether an FLSA violation occurred when defendant failed to pay plaintiffs their minimum and overtime wages. So the court is actually asking the government at this point to brief, and it says it may well be that the government can establish these defenses, but its opportunity to do so will come later on summary judgment or at trial.
So if I'm okay, taking then what you're telling me, Matt, about how this process will play itself out and what the judge has said so far, this is Matt Kaiser of Arnold and Porter. I would think that the argument from the government is going to be, well, if we couldn't pay them because we had no money. We operate on appropriated funds from Congress, and they had appropriated no funds. That's why we shut down in the first place. So it wasn't possible legally for us to pay these folks.
Well, that was the government's main argument in its briefs and in oral argument, is that we couldn't pay this because of the Anti-Deficiency Act. And so we could not actually make the payments on time. And therefore, if you look, they wanted the court to look at the totality of the circumstances and said, based on the totality of circumstances and given the fact that there was only a brief delay, there should not be a violation. And the court said, no, you look at the regular test, you look at the regular payday, and if these folks were not paid on the regular payday, there is a violation. And the fact that there was a government shutdown or the fact that there wasn't an appropriation was not compelling to the court, and the court, in fact, relied upon a Ninth Circuit case called Biggs, where the California state legislature was at a budget impasse, and they likewise didn't make payments on time. And the Ninth Circuit rejected that argument, and so here, too, did the Court of Federal Claims.
The story in Fed Times says more than a million federal employees worked without pay during the shutdown, but not all of them will qualify for the lawsuit. Do we have a sense of why that is, what the distinction is between employees that do qualify and people that don't?
I think that's an important question. It's going to apply to those non-exempt employees that get paid. They don't get paid just a regular salary. They get paid by the hour, so they're non-exempt, and who actually didn't get paid on time, or those that didn't get paid qualified overtime, because there's actually an overtime claim, and there's also the claim for not meeting minimum wage. The one part of the case that actually was thrown out is there were exempt employees that worked. And so exempt means you're exempt from overtime. So if you make $100,000 a year and you're in a managerial position, it doesn't matter if you work 1 hour or you work 60 hours in 1 week, you're still going to get paid the same salary. And the plaintiffs wanted to include those folks in this lawsuit as well, and saying that those folks lost their exempt status during this time frame, and so they could be included in the potential collective action, and the court rejected that argument.
If I'm an employee trying to figure out whether I qualify for this or not, or if I know that I do qualify for it and I'm paying attention to what the next steps are, what should I be watching in the next couple of weeks and months, Matt?
I think that there will certainly be an interest in this case. There will certainly be more news articles after the September 2nd deadline, when there are going to be motions about certifying this as a collective action.